The First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution gives us many freedoms in the ways we express ourselves, and that First Amendment is often used to engage in debates about other laws, including the Second Amendment to the Constitution. We've argued since before the Constitution itself about the proper role and use of guns in American life, an argument that obviously continues to this day. We'll focus in this hour on the current session of the Oregon Legislature, which features dozens of bills on guns and their possession and their purchase and more. You'll hear both sides in this hour, just not at the same time. First up, Kevin Starrett, the Executive Director of the Oregon Firearms Federation. Kevin, thanks for joining us today on The Exchange. Kevin Starrett, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, good to have you here. Give us a general sense of what the Federation's all about.
Well, the Federation was formed in 1998 as we watched the institutional gun lobby give away the store and basically make deals and erode the rights of gun owners in Oregon. So with some help from the National Organization, Gun Owners of America, we put it together. And since then, we've had a position that a right's a right, and it shouldn't be compromised away.
So you said the institutional gun lobby gave away the store. How so?
Well, every time there was an effort to introduce new restrictions on people's rights, instead of saying no and standing up to them, they made deals and basically said, well, take away half our rights. And at this point in Oregon, much of the Second Amendment has been eviscerated. And, of course, in this session, there'll be attempts to take away the rest of it. We've been pretty fortunate, you know, in the time that we've been doing this, we've put the brakes on every single gun control bill except for one that was passed in 2015, which was Senate Bill 941, which is an extremely dangerous piece of legislation, which was promoted as a universal background check bill. But what it actually did, it endangered some of the most vulnerable people in our state. We've got a program in Oregon called the Address Confidentiality Program, which isn't very well known, but it says that if a person is in fear for their life, that they can have their address suppressed, and all their mail goes to a Department of Justice mailbox and is forwarded to them under a pseudonym. Well, now, these people are in fear for their safety, in fear for their children's safety. Under 941, they're forbidden from buying a firearm. And this extremely dangerous outcome, none of these things were really considered when the bill, well, some of them were considered and ignored, but that's one of the things we're trying to reverse. You know, of course, the anti-gun lobby is thrilled. I mean, they've gotten very close to the feminist lobby, all of whom claim to be protecting women from aggressive men. But what they've actually done is they've made women almost completely defenseless against predators, and that appears to be their goal. They appear to be far happier seeing women be subject to violence than given the ability to take control of their own lives.
That's making a bit of an assumption, isn't it?
I mean, no, it's not making an assumption at all. This is their history.
Well, sorry, SB 941, you said it primarily meant to be a background check bill. Why, then, make it hard for people who fear for their lives to get guns?
You'll have to ask the people who promoted 941. You know, we brought up issue after issue when we said there are the problems that are going to happen as a result of this bill, and the Democrats in the legislature said we're not interested in hearing them. We offered them alternatives that would actually address the things they said they were concerned about, but they wouldn't even allow those to be discussed. I mean, this is not an assumption. This is not speculation. This is on the record.
Give us an example of a place where you recommended a change, some place that you could live with at the Oregon Firearms Federation that was rebuffed.
Oh, for example, when they introduced 941, which basically created enormous complications for people transferring firearms, we said, look, you people are saying you don't want firearms transferred to felons. Under current Oregon law at the time, it was illegal in a private transfer. For example, if I wanted to transfer a gun to another private individual in Oregon, if I knew that person was a felon, that would be illegal to do that transfer. We made a suggestion that why don't we just make it illegal if the person's a felon, whether you know it or not. That way you have a vested interest in knowing who you're transferring a firearm to. But if you want to store a firearm for your next-door neighbor who's going out of town, or you want to safeguard a gun for somebody who maybe their personal circumstances dictate that it's best not to have a gun in the house, that's a crime in Oregon now. And the same people who are pushing these safe storage laws, or what they call safe storage laws, have made it illegal for me to safely store a firearm for a friend or neighbor who is either leaving town for some period of time or who feels it would be best because of someone who's visiting them or some personal circumstance that they not have a gun in their house. Now it's a crime if I safeguard that gun for them.
This is through restrictions on the transfers. That's how this came about?
Yes.
Kevin Starrett's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the executive director of the Oregon Firearms Federation. We're talking about, we're still talking about past legislatures, but we're talking about what this legislature is considering in the way of gun laws, and there's a pretty good-sized stack of bills there. You can join us on the exchange as we talk about the subject matter, 800-838-3760 to come in by phone. Your emails are welcome at jx@jeffnet.org. I want to come back a little bit, too, because you talked about not just restrictions, you're talking about the evisceration of gun rights in Oregon. That's also a fairly strong term.
Well, listen, a number of years ago, with the support of your next guest, a bill was introduced, House Bill 3200. That bill outlawed every single modern firearm and gave the police the right to do warrantless searches of your home. Now, we were able to defeat that, but I think it would be very difficult to argue what the intent of this type of legislation is. Now we've got legislation that is basically, we had a bill that was attempted last year, which actually passed the House, which we were able to defeat, which basically legalized theft. It said we have a bill now that does that. You could take a gun that doesn't belong to you, that a family member has, and bring it to a gun dealer for safekeeping. Well, you have no right to steal someone else's property, but this is the kind of bill that's been introduced. So I don't think that there's any question what the intent is. You know, we hear all the time from the anti-gun people that, well, gun owners in Oregon aren't well-trained enough, and they get these concealed handgun licenses, but they have no training, which isn't true, of course. But when a bill is introduced to allow the expansion of training facilities in Oregon by changing zoning regulations, they come and argue that, no, we can't have that, because now, and this is their rhetoric, bullets will be zinging over your cows' heads. Now, obviously, the point of building a safe shooting range is to make sure that that doesn't happen. But even when we attempt to expand the training opportunities, they oppose that as well. And so, it's, you know, they can say what they want about gun safety and only want to keep guns out of the hands of bad people, but the fact is, based on their history, and mercifully, most of their history has failed. There's no question what their intention is.
Kevin, do you and Ceasefire Oregon and any of the other groups, do you ever get together without legislators present just to try to hash out some things, or is that just not done?
No, it's not done, because they've made it perfectly clear what their intentions are. I mean, they're not honest about it most of the time when dealing with folks like you. But we know what they're doing, because we've seen the kind of legislation they've introduced. We've seen how every time we tried to say, let's improve training facilities, let's put in place a program that would teach children how to safely handle a firearm that they may have stumbled on. Let's keep our kids safe. We got no problem with sex education. We got no problem with all kinds of other controversial issues. But this kind of thing, which would actually promote safety without necessarily promoting gun ownership, of course, is opposed by them. So, look, the fact is that it's not like there are just misunderstandings here. We understand each other perfectly. I mean, we understand what the anti-gun groups want to do, and it is not to reach any kind of agreement with us.
Is the acronym OFF for Oregon Firearms Federation accidental?
Yes. No. Oh, well, no. Is it accidental?
No. Did you choose the name so you could get the acronym?
It's the acronym for the name that we chose for the organization. There's nothing secretive or nefarious or anything else.
But, I mean, did you want to be called off? Was that the point of choosing the name you chose?
You know, to be honest with you, I never really gave it that much thought. We created the name because it reflected what we did, and that's the acronym that came along with it.
All right, I want to come back. You mentioned concerns about training, particularly training for people who have concealed carry permits. What is the requirement at this point? If you get a concealed carry permit from a sheriff in the state of Oregon, what are the requirements to get trained before or after you get that permit?
Well, the requirements are before, and the requirements that you complete a class that's either taught by a law enforcement officer or an NRA-certified instructor. And when you look around the country, every state has completely different requirements in terms of training, from very, very stringent requirements, which are extremely expensive, which, of course, means that lower-income people can't have the same opportunities that richer people can have, to states that have the only requirements are that they pass the background check. And if you look around the country, what you'll see is that that has no bearing on how people behave. What matters, how people behave and how they use their firearms is entirely a matter of judgment, and not a matter of how many hours they spent in a classroom or on the range. Now, I'm a firearms instructor and a big promoter of firearms education. And not only do I teach it, but I take that training every time I can, every chance I get. Because I think
you take it as a student yourself.
I take it as a student. I teach it and I encourage it. I think it's a great idea, and I think it'd be a great idea to expand the opportunities in this state for people to get training. But the fact is that when a person's carrying a firearm, and you can go research this yourself, the misuse of firearms by concealed handgun license holders, irrespective of what state they're in, is extremely small and not in any way tied to their training requirements.
Kevin Starrett, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the executive director of the Oregon Firearms Federation. It's a general discussion about gun rights, but more specific to Oregon and the Oregon legislature. And quite a big pile of bills dealing with guns in this legislative session. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760. You can send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Joe in Talent writes, your guest needs to understand none of our rights are absolute, even the Second Amendment. When your argument in total is based on fear and devoid of logic or compromise, then you know that there's money behind it. I wonder how much he and his organization gets from the NRA. Question from Joe in Talent.
Well, Joe, you've really hit the nail on the head with fear and ignorance, let me tell you, because clearly, my argument is not lacking logic, and I am not promoting fear. And as for how much money we get from the NRA, we get nothing from the NRA, have never gotten a dime from the NRA, get no help from the NRA, and often find ourselves clashing with the NRA over issues. But listen, this is the kind of thing that we face from the anti-gun left, is that instead of actually coming back and arguing or debating and saying where my position is wrong, where our position is wrong as a supporter of gun rights, they throw insults around. They say, I'm spreading fear. I'm not spreading fear. I'm spreading knowledge. And so those kind of comments clearly are, you know, they're pejorative, they're pointless, they're a waste of our time. And if he had a reasonable argument or he wanted to claim that something I said is incorrect, I'm willing to hear that. But just those personal comments, ad hominem attacks, really don't get us anywhere.
Well, but the insults are not confined to just this end of things, because even on your own website, it says Oregon is still controlled by rights-hating leftists. That's an insult, even if you perceive it to be
that
true.
That is an absolutely accurate statement under the circumstances. The Second Amendment is a right under our Constitution, right? If you look at the legislation that has been attempted by the leftists in the legislature, it is impossible to conclude that they are other than hateful of those rights. You know, this is not something that I'm just making up. The history of the legislation is out there. You know, it's there. And fortunately, we've been able to stop many of the worst attempts. But this is not something that we're just creating out of thin air. You can go back and look at the bills that exist now. Listen, last year they attempted to pass a bill that would have allowed a person who had absolutely no credentials to have your gun rights taken away. You wouldn't know about it until you tried to buy a gun. You wouldn't be allowed to know who made the accusation. And if you wanted to fight it, you'd have to do it at your own expense. Now, this is stuff straight out of the Kremlin. You can't tell me that someone who would dream up that kind of legislation is a rational person who wants to deal with a real problem. In many cases, the person who could make the anonymous accusation against you and force you to lose your rights didn't even have to know you. Now, really, what conclusion can you draw from that kind of extreme legislation except that the people behind it just hate people who have, you know, to try to exercise this particular right?
So let me get the bare earth here and where Oregon Firearms Federation stands. Are you against background checks at all?
Well, listen, background checks would be great in a perfect world, but the fact is that background checks is a great example. In the practical world, background checks have, you know, your next guest will talk about the millions of people who've been denied guns, you know, that we stopped felons from getting guns because of background checks, all right? Well, no, they stopped a lot of people from getting guns. But yesterday I testified at a hearing for the Oregon State Police budget. The background checks are conducted in this state by the Oregon State Police. Last year, there were 8,700 delays of firearms purchases. 95% of those delays were unjustified based on the numbers that the anti-gun people brought forward. So the typical delay now is 2 to 6 months. Sometimes it goes to 2 years. That 95% of the people are denied their rights for that period of time because of a background check system that simply doesn't work. And now there's a bill to make the background checks indefinite and codify that in statute, Right now, there's a safeguard that says if the state police just don't do their job, it's lawful for the firearm to be transferred in the absence of a denial.
Which is called the Charleston loophole, because after the time expires...
But everything that allows a person to exercise their right is not a loophole. You know, people see loopholes everywhere. In the Charleston case, that person would have gotten the gun under any circumstances because there were so many human errors made. But the reality of it is this. If a person like myself were delayed or denied on a firearms transfer, it would be an aggravation and it would be an indication of incompetence on the part of the state police. But put yourself in the shoes of a single woman, a gal alone, living in a rural area. Maybe she's got young children. And now she's facing a predator or a stalker. She wants to protect herself. She tries to buy a gun and the state police say, "Hey, maybe 6 months." Now, I think it would be real interesting to hear the left and the anti-gun people argue about what other right they would deny or delay somebody for 6 months. How about the right to vote? Sorry, you can't vote until the election's over because the state police didn't give you permission. So while it sounds wonderful to say, well, we're going to check people's backgrounds, the fact is that in many cases, the system just doesn't work at all because it's down. But there is not a day that goes by that I do not hear from someone who says, look, I have nothing in my background, but the state police delayed me. And you can go listen to the hearing yesterday on this issue, and legislators came up and said, people come to me all the time saying, why am I being denied the right to have this for 6 or 8 months? I haven't done anything wrong. So if you could create a perfect background check system, well, it wouldn't be as bad, but it is still a prior restraint on your right. And look, you're a broadcaster. You're exercising your First Amendment right. Would you agree to asking for police permission every day before you got on the air?
Well, probably not, but I'm not in that circumstance, am I? So I want to get to this point. So in a world where the background check doesn't come through in the time allotted, the default position then is without the information, go ahead and give the gun?
The state and federal law allow a firearm to be transferred after 5 days if the background check system fails to do what it's supposed to do, which it fails regularly. And so ultimately, I cannot come up with an explanation or any reason to say to somebody, we can't do our job, therefore you can't have your rights. No, I don't see why that makes sense. The fact is that a person who is really dangerous or violent is most likely not going through a background check anyway. And look, you can go right now and look on the Oregon State Police website and look at what happens. Background checks, there's about 200 denials every month. I strongly suggest you go look at their charts and graphs and see if that's 200 people, many of whom are actively wanted by the police, how many are arrested. The average is just barely above zero. So this whole idea that this background check system makes any difference is just a charade. It's a canard. Person goes in to buy a gun, he's denied. Maybe he's denied an error, but if he's denied correctly, hey, he walks out of the store. And even if they find him later, which is typically months later now, because they only have three cops investigating this, they're never arrested. So really, Jeff, who's zooming who here?
So Kevin Starrett, I want to get to just some basic ideas here then, because it seems like I can imagine that for some people the issue is not whether they can own a gun. They can, but where? I mean, so in your home, sure, but I mean, where else does the Oregon Firearms Federation think you should be allowed to have a gun?
Well, I mean, I guess I'm not really understanding that question. You know, where should I not be allowed to have a gun? If I'm rational in my home, do I suddenly lose my mind when I step out into my driveway? I mean, why? Where is the list of places I should be prohibited?
Well, the idea of defending your home, I guess, is the point I was coming from. But I mean, it seems like a lot of people would agree with that. But as far as like defending your car, defending your person in a crowded place, I mean,
well, but why should I be forbidden the opportunity to protect myself and my family simply because I leave my home? My home is a pretty safe place. I live in a safe neighborhood. I have locks on my doors. I'm at a pretty low risk inside my home. But, you know, when I've faced the most serious risks I face have been, I was once attacked by a mob outside of a TV station in Portland. Should I not have had the right to protect myself there because I wasn't in my home? Should I not have the right to protect my wife or my kids when I leave the house?
So are there any bills in the legislature that you do support at the Oregon Firearms Federation?
Oh, yeah, there's quite a few. There's quite a few that we helped draft. I mean, one of them would take care of this very, very dangerous address confidentiality problem. And there are others that would reduce the restrictions that are placed on people who are attempting to do private transfers, which now, of course, are illegal. There's quite a few of these bills that would benefit gun owners. There are some that are just, quite frankly, silly. There's a tax credit to buy a gun safe, but the tax credit is like $10 or something. So, but yeah, there's quite a few bills that we support and quite a few bills that we help draft. But as you have mentioned, there's almost 50 of them now, and of course, very few of those are going to move forward. And the positive ones, the ones that would protect, say, folks in the confidentiality program, or we have another bill that would protect people who were protected by a restraining or some other protective order. Those people currently, if they want to defend themselves, which the anti-gun people don't seem to want to do, can't legally do it until they have gotten a concealed handgun license, which could take, and some counties have just said, we're not even taking applications for the next 6 weeks. We're not, we'll give you, it's a waiting period to get your appointment to come in is 6 months. That's a long time for a woman afraid of somebody who's stalking her. So we have a bill that would allow somebody to carry a handgun concealed if they'd applied for the permit, so that and assuming that they would be violating no laws by having a gun. So what we're looking to do is create legislation that would actually protect the most vulnerable people. While the other side, the entrepreneurial victimhood side, wants to keep those people completely under the care of a state which really doesn't take care of them in the first place.
So as broadly as you see the Second Amendment, we're down to our last minute here. I mean, are there any places that guns should never be or shouldn't be generally?
I would probably say it would be a bad idea to have a gun inside of a prison.
Other than that?
Well, in the hands of a intelligent, law-abiding person, honestly, without being facetious, no, there's no place a person should be denied a firearm.
Okay. Thanks for the education. Kevin Starrett is the executive director of the Oregon Firearms Federation. We're talking about general views on guns and, of course, the fact that the Oregon legislature has a pile of bills this year. Kevin, thanks so much for spending time with us today.